If you don't know SiriusXM, then listen up. Commercial-free music, plus sports, comedy, talk, and news. They have it all. And right now, you can get your first 3 months of SiriusXM outside the car for just $1. Go to SiriusXM.com/busted to see offer details and to subscribe. Offer available to new SiriusXM streaming subscribers. SiriusXM, no car required.
This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156.
Welcome to the Busted Open Podcast. This is Dave LaGreca. On today's episode, WWE Hall of Famer, the world's strongest man, a world champion in not one, not two, but three different sports, Mark Henry and I talk all about Dark Side of the Ring from this past Tuesday. I'm telling you right now, Mark has got a very unique perception of what took place for Brawl for All, so we'll definitely get into that. And an interesting story about him and Vince McMahon in terms of Brawl for All. Also, we get into The Undertaker, obviously off the heels of WrestleMania 36, and who could be The Undertaker's next opponent. Plus, we talked to Low Key of MLW with a surprise call-in from somebody that you definitely want to hear. All that right now on the Busted Open Podcast. While we were in break, I was talking about Bully, and I mentioned Bully, and I said Mark. I was like, Tommy and Mark. And Mark's like, well, you know, I'm Mark. You're talking about Bully. And you brought up that it reminded you of your grandmother.
Yeah, like, you're getting old. Because my granny would be like, Eddie, Robert, Frank, Mark, Patrick, you know who the hell you are. Get over here. Just call every dude in the family.
my grandmother sometimes would call me Ginger, and Ginger was the dog. So she would be damn like, Ginger, get over here. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Granny is mean.
Yeah, like, then she'd be like, Donna, Patrick. And you know, you called me the dog. You called me my female cousin, Donna. What's wrong with you, Grandma? It's time. Everybody has an expiration date, and I think I was like, your expiration date just came up.
Just give me the keys and don't complain about this. I'll drive you wherever you need to go.
Like, when you start calling me the fuzzy animal that pees in the corner of the house, I got a problem with that. You want to?
Oh, my God.
But
there's grandma listening to the show right now that's like, you bastards, you should be grateful that I call you anything.
Boy, that Ryan McKittle sounds so different.
No cookies for you. Hey, man, my grandmother used to make cookies, like tea cakes. That's how she controlled us. She's like, okay, nobody's getting no cookies. And he'd be like, shit, why are you always messing up? He's just fussing at amongst each other like, listen, man, you need to go in there. And you need to apologize. You need to try to go rake the yard or something. Go do something. Like, we would police each other because we wanted them cookies, man. It's like crack as a little kid.
I would think, Mark, of all people, that you would be able to talk your grandmother down. Like, when she got that angry that she says, all right, no cookies for anybody, you would probably be able to kind of schmooze it so they can get the cook. You were the guy that you were the heavy artillery that they would send into the kitchen.
You know it. My brother would be like, look, hey, just go sit next to Granny and talk to her because, like, she's pissed. And I don't know who left the refrigerator door open one time, but like it was something about doors. Who left the door open? Like that was like one of the worst sins that you can create. You can go out and kill somebody, but if you leave the door open, apocalypse, the second coming, like, oh my God, it was the whole end of the Bible just rolling up on you, and it was nothing you could do. She just would go off, and I was always the one, just like Mark. Go and talk to Granny, please. We can't even walk in or out of the house. She's going to hurt somebody. And she would make us go get our own switch. Go get me a switch. Like, God dang. Not only, it's like dead man walking. You, not only are you going to get your ass beat, but you got to go get the implement in which you are going to get beat with. And she would tell you what tree. Get that sugar gum tree right there. Because, you know, sugar gum branch, you can run around a corner and you can swing it and it would, like a boomerang, it would just turn around the corner and hit your ass to it. Like you couldn't get away. And they didn't break. You know a normal switch, it'll break. Three or four hits. Ow, ow, ow. Okay, it's over. Sugar gum. She was a scientist. She was a whoopologist.
But sugar gum sounds so inviting. Sugar gum sounds so tasty, sugar gum.
Okay, I can't wait till you come to Texas. Hey, oh, whoa, pull over. That's a sugar gum tree right there, and I'm going to whack your ass with one. Just so you can get a taste of what Lavelle Adams used to put down in the East Texas world.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Sorry that there were times you couldn't get your cookie, because there's nothing like eating the cookie. Mark, let's get into wrestling. Because that's
all right. Let's go.
Okay. I mean, as much as I love eating cookies, or the cookie. All right. WrestleMania 36. Why are you shaking your head like that for?
You need Jesus.
What? I'm just being honest. If I can't be honest with you, Mark, who can I be honest with?
Who?
Ooh.
Oh my God!
All right, let's get WrestleMania 36. You know, pretty big deal. Two nights last weekend. Before we move on to what took place during the week, I haven't really been able to get your take overall. What did you think of night number one and night number two of WrestleMania 36?
Well, I was really impressed from the beginning to the end on day one. Cesaro spinning and, you know, releasing and his hands, you know, I was like, okay, typical Cesaro. He would do something that was going to get attention. And that's what it's all about, man, going out there and making your own memories and creating a moment for yourself. And you go through that whole pay-per-view on the first night, and it was like a build into a crescendo. And it got down, finally got to AJ Styles and The Undertaker, which I thought should have been the main event on the second night to end everything. But they had to do something to get the buzz, and I guess that was the one that they chose. Unbelievable. I mean, the future of wrestling changed with one performance, because there has been cinematic matches before, a la Matt Hardy and so forth, Bray Wyatt, but nothing like that one. Undertaker did his damn thing, man, again. He just keeps on showing the world that he is different than the rest of us. And I was super impressed, and even it spawned a reaction in pro wrestling that you hardly ever see. You had people like Mick Foley going on social media going, hey, Vince, look, I want to be in the Boneyard match with The Undertaker at WrestleMania next year. And you had the thought made me go, wow, I can come out of retirement and do that. I mean, just that would be awesome. So now you can go back in time and pull guys that haven't wrestled in a while or been on mainstream television, and you can bring them back. And it's a way, I run into some people all the time, Dave, that's like, yeah, you're that wrestler, right? And I'm like, yeah, how you doing? You watch program? I used to watch back in the day, and then, you know, early 2000s, middle 2000s. I just don't know these people today. And I'm like, look, man, you got to give them a chance. And he was like, yeah, it was like just all the people I knew just went away, and it was all these new people. Now you can use the older guys to give the rub to some of these younger guys and bridge the gap. The gap is there's a big gap. All of a sudden, the older wrestlers just went away. And I think this is the time to bridge that. And Undertaker and AJ Styles, they were the catalyst for it.
Yeah, and Mark, I mean, that probably more than anything else is what people were talking about coming out of the weekend. We'll get into the Firefly Funhouse in just a minute from night number two. But that was, to me, the perfect way to end night number one. And I don't know if I would have thought that going in. If you would have told me that a cinematic production of Undertaker and AJ Styles, that wasn't really actually a match, but more of a mini movie, was going to end night number one, I would have thought that would have been a mistake. But man, it couldn't be further from the truth, Mark. I mean, that left a lasting impression. I think everybody who watched that loved it. I mean, very, very few people were negative about it, because it did harken back to another time with The Undertaker. And it kind of coincides with that trailer that's on the WWE Network for that limited series, The Last Ride. And you seeing the human element now of The Undertaker, and you're seeing the guy that has had health issues over the last 3 years and really has just been building up and building up towards that one WrestleMania match. And, you know, it's hard. And Mark, you can attest to this. Like, when you're a legend, when you're a Hall of Famer, the last thing you want to do is to step into the ring and maybe do something that could ruin your legacy. I know that sounds like an almost impossible thing to do, but I think that's what
not.
A lot of...
It don't sound impossible at all. That's why I quit, Dave, because there was a day that I saw that I wasn't me. I was like, that's not the representation that I want people to see of me. And I've heard all throughout history, like, oh man, you're going to get old one of these days and start taking those three-level bumps and crawling up the ropes. And I didn't want to be that guy. And I didn't want that to be the last impression of me. And I understand how The Undertaker, he was hobbled. And there were times where he had control to where he could pick me, Kane, Big Show, you name any, name somebody, he could muster it up to get us up for the last ride. He could muster us up and get us for the tombstone. He wobbled when he did it with Brock. He wobbled when he did it with Roman. And it was not because he was old. It was because he was hurt. Mm-hmm. He was beat up, and he's getting healthy. And granted, he's not as strong or as agile as he was in his prime, but he's still the Undertaker. And a healthy Undertaker can put on a performance like we saw. And man, it was amazing. It was amazing.
This is Luke Thomas from SiriusXM Fight Nation. Combat sports and the entire sporting landscape have been impacted as we all face a time of uncertainty in the world. We have concerns about our family, friends, and neighbors, and have taken time out to focus on the important things in our lives and be safe. One thing that we can be sure of is that we'll push through this difficult time together. Whatever happens in the world of combat sports and beyond, we'll be here for you on SiriusXM Fight Nation. In the meantime, you can join us for live sports talk on Mad Dog Sports Radio, Channel 82, and SiriusXM NFL Radio, Channel 88.
Coming off the heels of our conversation, Mark, about The Undertaker and AJ Styles from WrestleMania, and you said something that was, you know, so profound, and that is that, hey, you know what? With that cinematic, you know, presentation like we saw in night number one of WrestleMania, you could bring back a legend. You know, Mark just said, hey, you know, I'll come back. If that's the way we could do it, Mark Henry and Undertaker, or Mark Henry and fill in the blank, using that type of presentation. But when it comes to The Undertaker, I think it's a very, very short list of guys that you would like to see The Undertaker face. Like, it kind of goes that fantasy Booker in me. Like, who is that one match that you would love to see The Undertaker in? And quite honestly, Mark, at this stage, what could be the last match for The Undertaker. You know, you don't really know how much longer The Undertaker could go. And I think the one opponent that a lot of people would want to see against The Undertaker, to me, would be Sting.
Wow. I would have to agree. You think about all the great matches that Sting had. All of him flying in from the rafters to the ring and rappelling down into the arenas and you name it. And all of the great talent, historical talent that he beat. And then you talk about The Undertaker and the streak and the matches he had with Shawn Michaels and the pageantry of his entrance. And then you have Sting say, you know what? As great and as illustrious career that I've had, I'm not on the lips of the wrestling fans like The Undertaker is. And it's not jealousy. It's not envy. The winner gets to tell the story of who was the greatest. And Vince McMahon won the war between WWE, WWF, WWE, and WCW. So when they say that the Phenom is The Undertaker, he said, I will beg to differ. And let's find out at WrestleMania next year. And Undertaker can rebuttal that and say, listen, man, I know you got your panties in a bunch because y'all lost the war and people don't talk about you the way they talk about me. But keep my name out your mouth. You saw what happened to AJ Styles last year, and I'll bury your ass next. And it's over. Everybody's waiting. Everybody's not thinking about WrestleMania. They're thinking about, wow, I can't wait to see Undertaker and Sting. And if they don't bite on that, I'm going to pull my hair out.
From your beard. Here's the thing, Mark. Like, I agree with you. And I'll take it a step further. A lot of people think that I dislike Sting, which is couldn't be further from the truth. I actually really like Sting. Is Sting one of the greats? 100%. Is Sting a Hall of Famer? Yes, he's in the Hall of Fame. He is a Hall of Famer. But I don't put Sting on that level of top 10 Mount Rushmore. To me, Sting is not on that level. He's not in the same vein as an Undertaker. I'm sorry, he's not. He's a notch below that. So when you look at that, and the reason I look at that is because of what you just said, Mark. The winners rewrite history. They control the narrative of the history books. And WWE/WWF won the war against WCW. So those legends are going to be looked upon a little bit higher due from the perception. And even when you look at Sting, you know, you look at that Starrcade match with Hogan, which was extremely underwhelming. Sting's last match was against Seth Rollins. He was injured. He couldn't walk out of that ring with his head held high. You know, he was injured. You look at the WrestleMania match with Triple H. It turned into a schmoz with NWO and DX getting involved. And Sting lost to Triple H. I truly think that Sting deserves to have that one last match at WrestleMania. And to me, that one last match at WrestleMania has to be with The Undertaker. Undertaker has nothing to prove. Undertaker could call into the show today, Mark, and say, you know what? I'm done. What you saw at WrestleMania 36, that's it for me. And he's going to be on the Mount Rushmore. He's going to be in the top 10. He's going to be regarded as the greatest personality and character in the history of pro wrestling. Undertaker has nothing to prove. But to me, with Sting, there is just a little tiny slither of a void in his career that I think needs to be filled. And I think for that reason alone, we need to see that match at WrestleMania 37 between The Undertaker and Sting. I've been screaming about it since WrestleMania 27. There was the whole rumor that Undertaker and Sting was going to happen at WrestleMania 27.
Yeah.
That's a decade ago. It's a decade ago, Mark. This needs to happen, and it has to happen. If it doesn't happen at 37, it's never going to happen, because what everybody has said is that, you know, The Undertaker, he's at the end. Sting, you know, he's probably reached the end. He's in the Hall of Fame already. He's been injured. But this is your way to do it, Mark. The way to do it is how they presented Undertaker and AJ Styles at WrestleMania 36.
Yeah, I've had, Dave, at least three or four friends of mine that are big comic book heads and guys that go to the Comic-Cons and so forth. And it's like, think about the Comic-Cons. Think about, you know, Undertaker and Sting build up and these guys showing up at Comic-Cons and, you know, kind of, you know, mixing it up a little bit, like staring each other down and creating moments that lead up into it without them touching. And I was just like, wow, that's pretty ingenious. And you can use every other medium, like, you know, social media. Not so much. AJ Styles and Undertaker, they talked about stuff that happened on social media. You tweeting pictures of you with a tiger and you with the family, and isn't that cute? And AJ Styles played that up so well. So well he did. You can use that medium too. And I just hope that we get what we want as fans. I know they're listening.
And I think, honestly, Mark, what you said would be the perfect way to go, where Sting is like, I need this match. I need to beat you. You know, my legend was buried when WCW died, you know, 20 years ago. I need this match. You know, I'm in the WWE Hall of Fame, but I never really garnered success in the WWE. I need to be beat the biggest legend of all time. And the Undertaker's attitude's like, get my name out of your mouth, or I'm going to slap it out, because I'm not going to be your stepping stone into what you feel you deserve as a legend. Like, to me, that's the story. And just the entrances alone, I think, will be WrestleMania moments.
Oh my gosh, man, can you imagine Sting at WrestleMania? And what, you know, we've seen Undertaker. We know what the Undertaker's interest is. Just on Saturday, he pulled up on a motorcycle and people lost their shit at home. I did. I mean, and when I saw the hearse pull up and the casket get pulled out, I was like, wow, Undertaker's making a hell of an entrance. And it was AJ Styles. I just popped. I was like, okay, AJ, I see you. I see you. Look what you're doing, man. And oh my gosh. I just got all excited, got goosebumps again, because they did things that entertained you before the match even started. And that's exactly what Sting and Taker would do.
And that's just the production alone. I mean, I know a lot of people kill me because I've been yelling and screaming about this for forever, and people are telling me to let it go and let's move on. And, you know, but, you know, if you're and this could be not only the last match for Sting, this could be the last match for The Undertaker. I mean, I think there's a reason why they're having this series on the WWE Network and calling it The Last Ride. I really do think that, you know, The Undertaker, you know, what he has put his body through and what he continues to put his body through. I think this could be his last match also, Mark. And for me, there's really nobody on the roster that fits that last match for Undertaker where it would really feel this big like Undertaker and Sting. He had the match with AJ. He had the match with Bray Wyatt. He had the match with Roman Reigns. You know, he had these matches with who you perceive as the top guys in the WWE right now. and nobody was really satisfied by it. I think an Undertaker Sting match would quench that thirst, and I think people after that match would be ready to let go of Sting, and let the Undertaker have his last ride.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, also see the Undertaker and Brock. I see the Undertaker and Baron Corbin. I see the Undertaker and Braun Strowman. There's a lot of things that you can do now with those guys that you probably wouldn't want to do in the ring, but you can still get it done.
Fuck Brock. He ended the streak. He ended the streak. Son of a bitch.
I remember the hate and the loathing that you used to spit and about Brock. He's a sometime once a year wrestling bastard. I just loved it. And now some of it just came out.
Just a little bit, Mark. Oh my God.
IndyCar fans, this is Brick by Brick with AJ Allmendinger and Jack Arute.
We can maybe provide you with a little distraction.
I'm just missing racing. The season will start and they'll have to be ready right when it starts. And I think we're really going to see the drivers that are physically and mentally most strong through this time are going to come out firing. If it's a shorter schedule, the start of this season is going to be even more critical than usual.
New episodes air Wednesdays at 6 Eastern on Dan Patrick Radio Channel 211 and anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app.
One of my favorite shows, Mark, and we talk about it a lot here on Busted Open, is MLW Fusion. You can watch MLW every single Saturday night at 10 p.m. on BeIN Sports. And one of my favorite wrestlers on the roster, and I know yours too, Mark, is joining us here live on the line, and that's Low Key joins us on a Friday. Low Key, how are you this morning?
I'm doing good. Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
The strongest voice in the business.
It's just a little early for me, that's all.
My brother from another mother. What's going on, man? It's no secret that I'm a low-key fan.
Well, it's appreciated, man.
And Low-Key's been on the show before. And I remember we had him in studio in New York years ago.
Mark, with MVP.
Yes, with MVP and Okada and Tanahashi. It's crazy. It's a picture that I hang on my wall. It's one of my favorites. And it's amazing. And I even said it then, Mark, and you just alluded to it. He's got the pipes of an angel, man. If anybody has like a voice for radio, it's Low Key. I mean, this is the guy that should be on the air someplace doing a radio show, for crying out loud.
The Quiet Storm.
Well, thank you.
With Low Key. The
Subtle
Tone.
In New York.
Yeah, get that W. That's good. That's a good gig, man.
Oh yeah, I've practiced it plenty of times in the car.
Yeah. So the next host of Busted Open will be Low Key. Low Key, let me ask you, because one thing, and I don't want to get into MLW Fusion in just a second, but one thing that I admire about you, and you mentioned MVP, and he's in the same vein, is the fact that you have such a love and passion for pro wrestling that you have done it everywhere. I mean, you have been everywhere and has done everything. Was that a goal that you wanted to accomplish, is that you wanted to be able to perform at every different venue for every different organization?
To me, it's I'm a headhunter. I'm an eternal champion. So my goal for anything that I'm doing, and anyone who's followed my career can probably justify this, I'm consistent. But it's because I'm consistently going after the top spot. I'm a headhunter. I go after the champion. I go after whoever's on top. But I'm the smallest guy around normally, so it's unsuspecting. People don't expect that from me because they expect the whole culture of little guy being fighting from underneath is the culture. I came in and broke that. And I just proved to everybody there's a difference. It's not size. It's integrity. It's not size. It's your heart. It's no different than pro fighting. But in pro wrestling, there's no off season. There's no health care. There's no union. You're out on your own. So if you're going to do this at the highest level, it has to be efficient. It has to be with that laser sight precision, because mistakes can be made, and those mistakes can cost you for the rest of your life. I just saw the Dark Side of the Ring recently and saw a picture of Draws. I saw Draws on the show the day before he ended up in that wheelchair. So I've been around long enough to see a lot of the ups and downs in the profession and the reality of nature and what we're involved.
I find Loki to remind me of samurais. You know, you look at you look at people that fight with honor and fight with a code, and that's mm-hmm. what Loki represents to me. All the years that I've known him, as well as the years of seeing him in Japan and on the Indies, it was not a death sentence for him to leave the WWE. It was new life. It was a rebirth of the guy that came before he came to the WWE. So I like the samurai comparison.
Yeah, thank you. That's the code of Bushido. But I'm also a lifelong martial artist, and I grew up with a really solid family. Most of the guys in my family were all military. So I got military upbringing with martial arts mentality. Then I enter pro wrestling. So wow. it all flows, but it makes sense because there's a logic behind it. I'm not distracted by a lot of other stuff, so I'm able to focus and concentrate my energy in order to get something done. Because I focused on my craft, that's the reason why I surpassed so many other people at an early stage, because I wasn't mimicking everything else that existed in the culture. You just said it was almost like a rebirth after WWE. I felt like that was more of me extending the existing culture up until that point. And then after I left, I'm ready to destroy it. And that's what you saw, the change. Because now there's a whole different mentality behind that fire. And that's the worst thing you can do, is have somebody with a lot of fire behind them now being able to concentrate and focus that energy.
Hmm.
And it shows. I mean, it shows with the product that you put on in the ring. I can say that you're a man to be feared, but you're also a man of integrity. You're somebody that, you know, people respect and should respect. And I think anybody that watches you wrestle will have that notion of you. Case in point, Mark, if you remember, I guess it was about a year ago, Mark. Remember we had from MLW, we were good enough to have Selena De La Renta on the show. Do you remember that, Mark?
I remember.
We had her on. So
she gave you the business.
Oh, she gave me the business. She gave me the business hard. So she was just ripping me. Continued to rip me on social media. And then I put out a tweet firing back at her. And low-key fired back at me. Now, in the world of wrestling and what we do, That's a common occurrence. But when Low Key did it, I shit my pants. I'm like, wait a second here. Please. Yeah, please. And obviously it was like but that's what I mean, though. It's that he has that integrity, and you can tell that he's somebody that if you're working with me and you're on my team, you're going to feel that as well. And that's something, low-key, honestly, that's something that should be admired. And I know for myself and Mark that we definitely admire that about you.
Well, thank you. It was that was my inherent protect my people. Mm-hmm. And I just happened to see that message. So when I saw the message, I just immediately responded to it. And I sent her a message, and she was trying to cool it off because I'm very protective of my people, especially if they're women. So if I see another male trying to cut them down or to try to antagonize, and there's no setup, yeah, that's kind of where things get a little foggy for people. Yeah. So,
just so you know, low key, there was a lot of setup there. There was a lot of setup there.
Man, because when I hit her up and she was like, no, it's all good. It's all good. I like how people quickly try to downplay stuff when I start asking questions just to try to diffuse, because I'm actually well-trained in conflict de-escalation, because I've been groomed by the president of the Verbal Judo Company. That's the stuff I was doing for years after WWE. Mm-hmm. So on top of me being so quiet and effective with my silence, just wait till I open my mouth and I'm going to slice and dice you in a million different ways with verbal communication effectively. So usually people want to try to anticipate the aftermath, so they try to downplay everything sooner.
And it was really cool. Like, I mean, you know, and she's somebody obviously I support. I'm a big supporter of MLW. And when she came on the air, she has that skill on the microphone that she, you know, here I am promoting her and promoting MLW, and Mark was with me that day. She did an excellent job of just cutting the legs off from me. Like,
what did you do?
Yeah, she's got that, you know, she is excellent at what she does. And honestly,
but Court put it up to that.
Yeah, Court. Yeah, Court. Actually, yeah. I'm not going to go there. But you know, Court's like, you know, be prepared, Dave. She's going to just slice and dice you, and she has a skill to do that. I mean, you know, she's super talented, beautiful woman. But like, she will get you at the drop of a dime for you to hate her, and that takes a skill, and it shows on MLW Fusion each and every week.
Yes. The one thing that people forget is how young she really is. She's very young. She's early 20s. So to be put in the position that she is or she has and to deliver the way that she has is surprising, because with her level of experience, you don't expect her to do so well. And it's her attentiveness. She's very inquisitive. So she's trying to learn and she's trying to adapt, but she also has inherent skills that she's strengthening. And that's what Court does. He's trying to put her in position to strengthen those skills. And then the lineup, the pairing of how we work together, you know, that's more of a confidence booster with what she was doing and how we were paired. So, you know, the one thing that separates her from a lot of other girls is the inquisitiveness, the work ethic. A lot of other people, they behave according to the culture of what currently exists. So you end up seeing the same behavior repeated over and over again. I warned her years ago, you got to think differently than everyone else so that you can perform differently than everyone else. And she's been pretty good at that.
All right, let's get into what happened last week. MLW Fusion each and every Saturday at 10 p.m. Yeah. And it's one of my favorite shows each and every week, Loki. And you had a matchup with King Mo. And, I mean... Yeah. You talk about a controversial finish to that match. I mean, first of all, the referee should be fired after making a decision like he made in that matchup. I mean, you know, blindly seeing that towel in the ring and then calling the match off, because obviously that wasn't the way it went down. A lot of interference, obviously interference from Filthy Tom Lawler. So, you know, please talk a little bit about what we saw last week on MLW Fusion.
Well, last week was the match for the branding of the King of the Knockouts in Major League Wrestling. I'm facing King Mo. King Mo's a professional fighter coming down with Dan Lambert of American Top Team. They're entering pro wrestling and coming into Major League Wrestling trying to make some type of statement, except the statement that they've made this entire time is a rather questionable one. One, King Mo, as bad as you are, and if you want to call yourself a knockout master, you lost your last several matches. You've been knocked out several times. On top of that, you're coming into Major League Wrestling, and instead of aiming for the champion, you aim for me. Why is that? Ah, that's right. I'm the smallest guy here. You want to pick on me? Should be easy, right? But it seems like, despite that there's an existing culture in pro wrestling, that carny culture that's starting to fade away because the guys are getting older now, despite the fact that pro wrestling has their culture, pro fighting has theirs as well. And what it seems to be is you got somebody who's had the hype build up for them in pro fighting, and they're trying to use that to come into pro wrestling and trying to impose. Well, that's fine. I've been around long enough to understand the game. I got into this a long time ago. I've been in this over 20 years. You're just getting into it. And what it appears to me is something that commonly happens in martial arts. You got somebody of an experience level, a certain experience level, coming in thinking they're going to impose on somebody they don't know. Cardinal sin. Your martial artist, never underestimate your opponent. But even worse, never discredit them in a way that is done with expectation and arrogance. You're setting yourself up for failure, and look at what's going on. You're picking on the smallest guy. You didn't go after the champ. Why? Easy. You're a bully. What do we do with bullies? We face them.
Well, not to interrupt you, Low-Key, but and just so you know, I'm doing this show from home. I'm not in the studio because of everything that's going on.
Right.
But my producer says there's a special guest on the line, and it just so happens it's the head of America's top team, and that is Dan Lambert. Mr. Lambert, how are you today?
Why am I not surprised?
Hey, I'm fine. I actually just got a panic call from court waking me up, begging me to dial in and try to save this segment, since everybody knows Low-Key means nothing but low energy and low ratings. So here I am.
Wow. Come on, man.
I mean, wow.
Not a good morning.
The mind of American top team.
First of all, Dan Lambert, I would think that after what took place last week that you shouldn't be coming in being as boisterous as you are, being that King Mo should not have really won that match last week.
Okay, here we go with the fake news. I don't remember seeing you in the ECW arena that night. They can play with all the post-production work and camera angles that they want to, but the fact of the matter is, Low-Key got knocked out. King Mo won the fight. You're lucky that fight was in a ring and not a cage when it lasted as long as it did.
Oh, that's how you see things. That's how you see things. Had you not, you were in the arena as well, were you not? You were right there ringside. Were you not holding that white tile for King Mo? Were you not? You heard exactly the same thing as everyone else. That crowd was behind me, and that crowd, that's right, and the crowd saw everything that you guys did. This was masterful. Believe me, I called you the mastermind of ATT for a reason. I'm not dumb. I've been around this for a long time. On top of that, I've been paying attention and training for a long time. I'm not dumb, Dan. I paid attention to what you've been doing, not only here, but years ago in another area in Orlando. Been paying attention very, very closely. Where I come from is New York. Where I come from, people get killed for the stuff that you guys have done. But you're in the business. You're in the business for taking pro fighters, taking their blood, their sweat, and their tears, giving them an environment for them to pay you, and you get a cut off of their money. You think I'm that stupid? You're coming into pro wrestling, and you think you're going to impose. You think you're coming into pro wrestling, and you think that you're going to hold yourself at a higher scale than everyone else when you haven't even earned your stripes in pro wrestling. You can sit here and talk as much as you want, but all you've ever done is provide a modern-day plantation for pro fighters. You're sitting there making money. You're sitting there earning stuff off of the blood, the sweat, and the tears, and the hard work of each and every man and woman who goes into that gym. But you're going to come into Major League Wrestling, and you're going to open up your mouth, and you're going to pontificate to me about my business, about what it takes to be a champion, about what it takes to put somebody down. And you're going to come in as if this is your playground. Damn.
Well,
you're setting yourself up real bad.
I'm probably a bigger fan in pro wrestling than the 18 listeners they have regularly on the show combined. But you talk about coming into MLW. King Mo's coming into MLW with the greatest accolades of anybody to ever step foot into that promotion, okay? But he did not come in there in a cocky manner. King Mo came in there respecting the business of professional wrestling. He didn't come in there saying, hey, I'm going to go have Ricky Steamboat, Randy Savage, WrestleMania 3 matches. He came in and he wanted to work his way up from the bottom, which is why he chose you, because you are at the bottom. Okay, he wanted to work his way up in a respectful manner. Contrast that with what we saw when we showed up at MLW, and what we got is some wannabe tough guy who spent 2 or 3 weeks at the local McDojo, now presenting himself to be the king of the knockouts. Those are our waters that you're treading in. You want to run with that in some local promotion in a high school gymnasium against a jobber, that's fine. But when American Top Team steps into MLW, you reach into your bag of gimmicks and come up with something else, pal, because those are our waters, and our waters get deep really quick.
I mean,
yeah, it looks like you needed floaties because look at exactly what you did. You had Eric Stevens, you had Dominic Guarini. There was no reason for them to be ringside, but exactly what they did. This was all strategy, respect, because you came right to the World Warrior. You came to somebody who pays attention to strategy in an extended period of time. I'm not dumb. I've seen this coming down the pipe for a long time, and you think I'm unprepared. That is not the case, sir. I've been doing this for a long time for a reason. And now what you've done, you've aligned ATT with Filthy Tom Lawler. That's quite surprising because I have a history with Tom. Tom, he was the one who dethroned me in Philadelphia. So for him to do what he did at the end of my match, and you can sit here and pontificate as much as you want about McDojo this and McDojo that. I'm McDojo nowhere. I'm in that ring proving myself for over 20 years against the baddest dudes in that ring. And for what? For you to come in here and to have assistance. You talk about being respectful, earning your way from the bottom up. It looks like you're a bottom dweller, and you like hanging out there with your friends.
Bottom feeder.
You want to come into Major League Wrestling. You want to try to take over Major League Wrestling at one of the most disrespectful, unprofessional manners that you can even think of with leverage, with assistance. There was nothing done like a man in that ring. Mo was nearly put out. He was very, very close. You saw how close he was. I could see it in your eyes. I could see it in your movement on camera. I knew exactly what was going on. Even the referee telling me, sit up, sit up, sit up, sit up. He's trying to warn me because he knows we're going to drift into the ropes. Referees are not dumb. But Mo was very, very close to being put to sleep. I didn't even have to clip his chin. I was putting him to sleep the same way that every other Gracie fighter would do to him. But
Kind of, sort of, a little bit of assistance. Pro wrestling friendly, post production work. Say whatever you want. Fact matters, you got knocked out, pal. Just like you and any Gracie fighter is ever going to happen if you step in with American Top Team. Okay.
is there going to be a rematch
whatever
here?
You need to do. It's good. You most certainly best believe I'm talking to court and I'm going after you guys. This is not the end of the game. What you guys did was interrupt me. That's the biggest mistake you could have done because Mo, he came after me. I didn't go after him. You guys interrupted me. I didn't interrupt you. So you guys, you know, the little talking out of both sides of your mouth can work on the fans. It doesn't work on me. I know exactly what you guys are doing. They're trying to destabilize the environment to gain control. I understand that. Good try. I respect that. But what's going to happen is I'm eventually going to get my hands on Mo. You're going to pay the price for that. Then I'm going to get my hands on Tom. He's going to pay the price for that because what you guys have done is interrupted me going after Contra. I wanted Fatu. You guys have now got my attention.
Well, hopefully we'll see.
I'm sorry. I just want to say we came after you because you're a stepping stone, Loki. That's all you are, okay? And we're going to take what you've got.
I can't wait
until
Loki gets his hands
on you.
Just
like we came in 1997 and took what the Gracies had in MMA and have been carrying that torch ever since on the top of the mountain of the MMA world, okay? So you just a little piece of our grand plan. You've already been taken out. You've already been knocked out. If you want a little more piece of that pie, you know what? You might have to step up in a cage and come into our world.
All right, well, we'll see what happens between you two. Oh, my, Luke Key, you can kill. Dan Lambert, I don't know how you got on the line, but cut him off, Guns. It's ridiculous. I'm trying to have an interview with Luke. I'm trying to have an interview with Luke Key, who's been respectful. No, yeah, it's I don't know if you heard. It's the number one sports talk show, so they're not going to cancel the number one sports talk show, pal. Having a respectful interview with Low Key. Don't need to be interrupted by somebody who cheats like you do. If you're as good as you are and your team is as good as they are, you wouldn't have to do what you did last week. But you did.
Exactly.
Why do we even let him on?
No, like it's Guns. It's Guns, our producer. Just puts anybody on the air. Sorry, Low Key.
Well, Guns got... we have to preface what's going on so he knows who not to let on.
Yeah, Dan, right. You know what? Top of the list, Dan Lambert, okay? People not to put on. Number one, Dan Lambert.
But you have to understand, exactly what I said, modern day plantation. He's getting paid off of the blood, sweat, and tears of those men and women. It's the same process as pro wrestling in the past. I'm not dumb. I can see patterns repeated over and over again, and you guys think that you're going to come in here and you're going to stick your chest out, and because you have the label of pro fighting, you have the label of being in the cage with Crow Cop, you have the label of being in the ring with Bader and all these other fighters, you think that you're going to intimidate people on the pro wrestling side because, oh, this is a work. This is where you guys have made a mistake. This whole hype of pro wrestling, the whole, oh, it's you with the volume turned up. It's you playing a gimmick. It's you playing a character. I'm not playing anything. That's the difference.
When you're a man, you're a man.
Because I've been myself. Exactly. There's no kid shit going on in here. And that's the problem. Pro wrestling has devolved into a high immaturity environment, and you got guys like Dan Lambert and you got guys like King Mo thinking that they're going to piggyback off of that and be opportunists. I see what's going on. You were successful up until a certain point in another area, and you hit a brick wall. Can't go any further, so you decide to go somewhere else. Oh, it's over here. It's pro wrestling. You're not dealing with the same level of competence in fighting that you would in pro fighting. So you're going to come in here and you think you're going to bully people. Okay, I've got 20 years of practice in dealing with bullies. Let's roll.
Let's
okay,
go.
I wouldn't want to mess with him.
I love
okay.
it.
Loki, thank you so
it.
Much for the time. I'm so sorry that Dan Lambert got through and interrupted our conversation, but I love watching you.
That's
again.
Right.
MLW
we'll
Fusion
That's five
each
minutes.
And every
we'll
Saturday on BN Sports. We'll have you on again after this whole mess is over.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. I'm sorry about that.
No, that's not your fault. It's guns.
Your home for all things combat sports is SiriusXM Fight Nation. Start your day with Hall of Fame Pro Wrestling Talk on Busted Open.
Respect these men and women that build the business.
Then, the Auk and Barak Show keeps you up to date on all things boxing.
Boxing is the theater of the unexpected.
And MMA guru Luke Thomas has you covered for mixed martial arts.
Joe Rogan is the most important influencer in all of MMA.
The fight game broken down like nowhere else. Only on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156.
One thing that you have really enjoyed, and we spoke to Evan Husney a couple of times leading into the debut of Dark Side of the Ring. I thought a very good episode on Brawl for All this past Tuesday on Dark Side of the Ring, Mark.
Yeah, I really did enjoy it. I sat and watched it with Jacob and was explaining to him that I wanted to do be in the Brawl for All, but due to Vince saying, hey, I think this is something we need to keep you away from. You know, you're doing good things, and I don't want to put you in a bad spot because it might be damaging to you down the road. And watching it last night made me remember all of the conversation that we had. And I'm grateful that I was protected from it because I do think that as much as I wanted to do it, it ended up being something that was kind of a, for lack of a better term, a black eye on pro wrestling.
There's no doubt about it. And, you know, there was injuries. I think the biggest one, because he was one of my favorites, was Steve Dr. Death Williams. I mean, you know, he had a long career before that. He was in his late 30s at that time, which still meant he had years to go. And, he pulled his hamstring during that fight. And then obviously it probably did more damage to his perception, his character, than any injury that took place in that ring. And, you know, like the fact that, who knows, Mark, like you could have excelled in that, or maybe there could have been an injury. And it was great that you weren't a part of it. But, you know, being with the company at that time, Mark, was there things that maybe you heard about that a lot of people don't know when it comes to Brawl for All? We had Vince Russo on the show, and it seems like talking to Vince Russo, there wasn't really a plan. This was just a tournament. There wasn't a plan for whoever won to go on and have a main event push or go on and have a run with Stone Cold Steve Austin. It was just a fly-by-night tournament. Is that the way it was perceived to you and the rest of the locker room as well?
Well, I mean, I'm sure that the people weren't lying. I mean, you see the interviews on Dark Side, actually how it came to be and how it unfolded. And, brother, it just didn't – it seemed like it was very disjointed and disorganized. And there was a thought process to it, but not much of one. And it was based on one guy wanting to see one guy get his ass kicked. And once that happened, then where do you go from there?
Yeah.
Nowhere. It went nowhere. And I think if you would have just, if they would have just said, okay, we're going to take Bart and we're going to put him against Stone Cold Steve Austin. They run a little 3 or 4 month program and, you know, Bart loses. Then now you've built Bart. You gave him the rub and he can go on and do other things, go against other people. But they didn't. They put him in there with Butterbean, who was a knockout artist, who actually, Butterbean was in Connecticut at the WWE gym, and in the studio they had a ring set up, and I kind of sparred with him a little bit. And I don't know if I've ever been so hit so hard in my life. And I felt like, well, if I keep him at the end of my jab, then, you know, I could eventually get him cornered. The dude knew how to cut the ring off, and he slipped my punches. He was a boxer. He knew what to do. He wouldn't, you know, all the hamstring injuries and knee injuries that the wrestlers were getting. You know why they were getting those, right?
Why?
Because they were not used to going backwards and forwards and pushing off those, the balls of your feet. They say in boxing to point your toe and to pivot when you throw a punch. Well, when a guy that's an untrained fighter throws a punch, he throws it with his shoulders and his upper body, and his whole upper body moves. That's telling a seasoned boxer where you're going to throw the punch. They already know you're going to throw it with that hand because of the way you stay, the way you point your feet, where your hips go. And it's like a boxer fighting somebody, and they're in slow motion, but they're not restricted. It was a complete bad idea.
And you know what? Like what you just said, Mark, is extremely telling. And I'm glad that was an awesome perspective, because I don't think a lot of fans know what you just said. But you know, Bart Gunn fighting other wrestlers in a brawl with gloves is one thing, but stepping in the ring at WrestleMania with somebody who is a knockout expert like Butterbean, like, and then trying to go in there as a boxer, how could you have success? Like, of course it was going to end the way that it ended. Probably should have ended a lot quicker than it did. Probably could have ended.
He's lucky that he didn't die, because I mean, I watched that fight again, you know, just to watch it. And I rewinded it in slow motion, him getting hit that first, like, really big shot. He should have stayed down. And then the second time he hit him, his head was facing backwards. It went beyond, you turn your neck as far as you can turn it. And his neck went 3 inches past that. It could have broke his neck. It could, man, you talk about a tragic, you know, thing happening. That's what you could have dealt with. And I watched Mike Tyson hit people, and it was the same way, like where their head would spin and all the sweat would fly everywhere and the mouthpiece would come out. And, you know, you saw Bradshaw take a punch and started shaking. Like, that's brain trauma. So, I mean, it's my wife's dad was a boxer, and he was the alternate for the 54 Olympic team. And when it got to the point where he was going to start fighting pro, he was a school teacher and a college graduate. He was a smart guy. So he was able to say, "Nah, I don't think this is for me. I want to fight, but I'm not going to fight guys that I know I could beat. I want to fight guys that are really good." And it took him one fight with Ezra Charles to realize, "You know what? I think this teaching thing might be for me." And it's a lot of these guys that are not smart enough to get it. The passion, the energy of being in a pro fight is like a drug, and it's hard to let go. I hope that other people that watch the Dark Side of the Ring get the fact that just because you're a big tough guy does not make you a boxer. It does not make you a fighter. Low-key is a, like he said, a smaller guy. 5'7", 180 pounds. But low-key will kick your ass. I've watched him throw kicks at a kick pad that I would have broke a horse's leg. I mean, it's just he's an incredible, credible guy, and he's trained. That's what he said. He said, "Man, I'm calculated. I train for this every day." And you put somebody in harm's way if you put them in the ring with somebody that just really knows their craft. And it did. It ended careers.
It did. It's crazy to think. Not only did it end careers with some of the people who lost, but ultimately it ended the career for Bart Gunn, who won the tournament. So a guy going in that says, "All right, this is going to do wonders for my career," by winning the tournament, Mark, it essentially ended his career.
Thanks for listening. Catch us Monday through Saturday on Busted Open from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM. Fight Nation, Channel 156. The Busted Open Podcast.